Welcome back to Thinking It Through. Hi, I'm John Lund. This is the fourth in a series of interviews that I did on the Big Island of Hawaii about a year ago. And this particular interview is with Kat Southern. I began to become more active physically once on the island, but my achy bones eventually sent me to Yoga Center, where I began to do a variety of things, and Kat was the instructor for the Gentle Senior Yoga, which I participated in. It was a fantastic experience, and Kat was kind enough to allow me to interview her while sitting at a local cafe in Hilo. And so what you're about to hear is her story, how as a Navy child, Hawaii was a place that she knew of when she was very young, and then after living on the mainland for a considerable time, eventually found herself moving back to and now living and working in Hilo. I hope you enjoy the interview. It runs about a half an hour.
I think we're rolling. Well, Kat, I'm sitting here outside. Kat, where are we? What's the name of this place?
Ke'awe Street. Oh, and this is Shark's Coffee.
Shark's Coffee.
The best shakes at the best price.
In Hilo. And I've just come out of what I call my human pretzel experience with Kat. Kat is
For those who don't know pretzel, it's hip openers.
Exactly. Kat and I have gotten to know each other on and off over the last couple years or so.
Has it been 2 years now?
I've been here almost two seasons.
Yeah.
So Kat is an instructor at Yoga Center. Kat, how long have you been an instructor there?
Oh, well, let's see. Full-time since 2007, and 2005 is when I came over and I subbed for a month.
Okay. Well, Kat, again, thanks for sitting down with me. This is a part of Thinking It Through podcast, and you're one of those terrific people that are making a difference to a lot of people's lives, and certainly to my life and my body on a every other day basis. But there are many more twists and turns in your story that I want to get to today. So, again, thanks for spending some of your time. And just a note to anybody listening to this, we are outside, so you're going to hear automobiles and various folks talking as we record this, but that's the beauty of Hawaii. Unlike the Midwest, where I'm from, where we'd be inside.
All layers will walk by, so you never know what will happen.
That's right. Kat, let's just first of all take a look at your life, and you're actually, we could call you almost a native Hawaiian, couldn't we?
Sort of. I was born in Hawaii.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about your original home and family and stuff.
Let's see. My mother was on the airplane and was given rubber diapers that said "Made in Texas" on them. They came from Cuero, Texas. My dad was in the service and he got assigned to Hawaii. And my mom followed him after she went and finished her schooling, which was 1 month after she got married in 1957 to my dad, and then took off on an airplane and lived on her own in Hawaii until she had me in 58.
Okay.
Right. I'm the honeymoon baby.
Ah. So you might be the oldest baby in the
family. I am. Yes. I am the eldest.
So you're a firstborn.
Yes, I'm the firstborn.
Well, I don't know if we can talk about all of that, but there are several that followed you, right?
Three brothers, and then my sister, the one that lives here.
Okay.
And then there was another sister, three boys, and another sister.
Wow.
So we have the older kids, and we have the younger kids.
Well, terrific. So were all those children born in Oahu? No, you didn't say?
No.
Okay, so.
No, just my brother, who's right under me.
Okay. Well, tell us a little bit about Oahu and the Navy. Do you recall any of those days?
Green.
Just green.
Green.
Yeah, just
a color. And a gray boat with a little coat looking at my mom. Seasick as we are traveling on a ship over to San Francisco, where we went next.
Okay, and that was even before school, right?
That was probably my earliest memory. I think that's why green is my favorite color, is because I just grew up with green.
Right.
All over the place. Right. And After that, always ocean, always living on a city that's close to the coast, which I think made a very big impact on me.
When I was looking at some of the things that you shared with me, and thanks again for sharing all that information about your life with me, you lived in the Puget Sound for a bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
As a five-year-old. Mm-hmm. Did you start school in Washington?
Yes, I started kindergarten. I walked a mile home by myself.
Wow.
Yeah, okay. I thought that when my daughter was five, she was going to ride the bus in the city all by herself.
Uh-huh.
Now I know that's not what's going to happen.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Yeah. Now, do you have any other memories of living in Washington?
I remember it being very cold. I remember being told not to go down to the creek below the house, which I would have three boys in tow with me, the gang leader, and take us all down and play in the creek.
Spooky.
Blackberries. Yeah. That grew right there in the yard. Raspberries, those are my favorite fruits. Remember a cold ocean you don't go into?
Right.
It's a little scary when you look through the pier, through a hole where they fish. Yeah, that's about it.
Yeah. Now you moved from there into California shortly after.
Mm-hmm.
Your father, again, was a Navy guy. Well, we don't have to go through all the places you lived, but you're aware of Navy kids, Army kids, military brats, sometimes they're referred to. I know something about relocating and living in different places and taking my family there and adjustments that have to be made. But tell me a little bit about what a child who grows up in a Navy family
You have just enough time. We moved pretty much every 2 years until I was a teenager. Or no, until I was 10. Then we stayed place for 7 years, but in 2 years, you're able to make a best friend, and then you have to break it.
Yeah.
And that's really hard.
Do you recall leaving some...
Oh, yeah. Over and over.
Do you have a name of a friend, an old friend, a child that you were kind of a friend with that had...
Mary Beth and Julie Geis. Their father was our dentist.
Okay.
He was as mean to me as he was to his own kid.
Okay. But you had to say goodbye to those guys to go to...
Yeah. I was just a very shy child, so it was hard for me in the first place to make friends. I was fortunate enough that we were close as siblings, so every time we moved, you know, you had like a little band of people
that knew you. Did you live in California after Washington, or did you, for a couple of years? Do I have that right?
We went San Francisco, Bremerton, then we went down to Imperial Beach.
Imperial Beach.
Yeah, that was my kindergarten. I remember this because I did two different kindergarten classes, one that was up in Washington and then the other half that was down in Southern California. Imperial Beach is like right there at the San Diego border.
And then eventually to Monterey, California?
Monterey, then we did from Monterey
to... Oh, these are all moves, right?
Yeah.
You're moving from, from
every
base
2 years,
to base or whatever.
Chula Vista, and then from Chula Vista we went to Long Beach, and that's where my dad got stationed for 7 years.
Okay, okay. Must have been nice, just kind of a breath of fresh air.
You're starting to feel a little normal, and you're starting to get some friends, and you've gone through... I went to Catholic school, then I got to go free to public school.
Uh-huh.
We were always in Catholic school up to grade 8, except for me, I didn't want to go to Catholic high school. I went to the public school system.
And you were in, it appears, middle school and early high school all in Long Beach, if not all of high school.
And then we moved back east.
Now, had you been east before?
No. Only to Texas every summer.
So where did you move?
Virginia Beach. It was very interesting. They had a north running road interstate and a east-west running road. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
So I came from the land of many roads to kind of a different way of living, different kind of weather, definitely. It was the first time I realized that you could die from cold.
From being exposed to the...
It was the first time in 30 years that it snowed in Virginia.
Right.
We went in mass as a family. We all got coats on the same day.
Oh, nice.
Never realized what it was to move there.
No, absolutely.
So 2.5 years later, after a boating accident, my companion didn't put the mast in right, and I hypothermia'd on the Elizabeth River. It was a class I was taking.
That's crazy. So tell me about that. Yeah, was that not, do you have recollections about that?
Oh, yeah. That's why I don't like going out on boats much.
I'm not
a boater person.
To this day.
You can't just step off and...
Did you guys actually tip over?
No. It was just, thank goodness, but we had no control over the boat. We were just drifting out there and had to wait until the Coast Guard got out there. And
did you suffer some hypothermia or something?
Nothing bad, just very, very cold, blue lips and uncomfortableness. I don't like to be. Maybe that's why I don't like to be cold.
Did you have a way to communicate?
The teacher who got the Coast Guard out to us because we were floundering.
Yeah. So does it matter the size of the boat anymore?
Not really, stay off a boat.
Uh-huh. Now, when you were a kid, is there anything about you now that you can, your particular interests in environmental things that were being expressed when you were young, like when you were a child, did you like to be outside?
I was a very indoor girl, and I loved to dance.
Okay.
And I used to arrange dances with the kids and put music on. I would make them up and just push all the stuff back in the living room and create a dance floor and encourage whoever wanted to dance to dance.
Oh, that's great.
I had a book, To Dance to Dream, and Isadora Duncan was sort of my style.
Okay.
I tried ballet with my sister once. She went on and took ballet, and I just thought it was awful. You're trying to form my foot in this direction, and I just want to leap across the room and out the door.
Right. So you did have some of that interest in movement even at a young age.
Yeah.
Doing some of that stuff.
Yeah.
With kids and neighborhood kids. Great way to make some friends, too, and kind of keep everybody kind of close to you as well.
Well, it was pretty much only my family. I guess it was a way of babysitting, I guess.
Yeah. Well, Virginia Beach, did you have to go to high school? Were you dropped into like senior year?
Yes, yeah.
Now, that's not a happy transition
for most
adolescents.
No, not at all.
Were you able to kind of connect with anybody your senior year?
Yeah, I had a really good girlfriend back there.
Right.
She's an English teacher back east.
So she's still back east.
Grace Losky.
Uh-huh.
Although that's her maiden.
Uh-huh.
So Grace, if you hear this, hi.
Yeah. Were you still out east after high school?
Mm-hmm.
You were 19, 20?
I did a year and a half of school at Old Dominion University.
In Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I was probably your typical floundering. I mean, I loved university.
Mm-hmm.
The course catalog, that is like a candy store for me.
Yeah.
What can I take? What's interesting?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was actually a phys ed major and kind of bordering on art.
Uh-huh. And movement again? Were you?
No, not really any movement. I was swimming then.
Okay. Yeah, you have some WSI.
Yes, it was the second favorite job. It was my favorite job back then. I was a water safety instructor.
So we have you in Virginia. You're at Old Dominion for about a year or so, and then do you decide to kind of, that's enough?
I was driving home in the really highly esteemed Mustang that I couldn't stand.
Uh-huh.
My dad got it for me.
Yeah.
And it was an old one, so it didn't have a defroster.
Okay.
I'm going around the curve out of Norfolk and down towards Virginia Beach, and a big puddle of water splashes across this windshield and ices it up, and I can't see anything.
Oh, no.
So I'm rolling down the window, and I'm on the curve with all the traffic at the end of the day. I get myself off to the side, and I start crying because I realize I could have just died.
Yeah.
And that was my decision.
Yeah.
I'm 19. I don't have to live here anymore. I'm going to move.
To where you don't have ice on the windshield.
Yes, I'm going to move back to California, the only home I ever knew.
Right.
You know,
right.
So that's what I did. I got myself accepted into Cal State Long Beach, and I took a 3-day bus trip.
Oh, really?
I'll never do again.
No, those things are long.
Oh, my God. But...
Now, when you got to California, did you have a place to live?
Yes. We had family friends out here, and I lived with them like a daughter.
Oh, that's great.
And about half a year later, I moved out and moved in with four girls sharing a room.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we each had a room.
And at this time, you were in Long Beach going to school.
1980, I started Cal State Long Beach.
Uh-huh.
And loved it so much that I went, accumulatively, I did 17 years of university. I was never going to quit.
Wow.
I was just going to go, like, become a professor and just never leave the campus.
Right.
And I changed my major 3 times.
Psychology
to dance, mm-hmm. and then to French.
Okay.
And I finished up with that.
Wow. Okay. So you finished up with French.
Yes. Started on a French master's to see what it's like, and I had a graduate student working on his PhD who was my instructor.
Advisor,
yeah. Instructor. Well, he was our instructor for class, and it was the comic spirit of French, or the spirit of French comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this guy, he could pick his favorite play, his favorite character, the play. I saw you had to have tweezers, and you pulled out the fluff from one word.
Right.
And that was what your thesis was on. And I knew.
Right.
This was not going to do it. This was not going to cut it.
Yeah.
I'd already found out I was going to do translation and do French translation and English back and forth. And when I realized I was going to sit in front of a computer all the time,
right.
That's when I stopped that.
Right.
So I was looking, what else can you do? I didn't want to do it. And so that was where really I had to start looking around, what was I going to do? And that was about the same time that a boyfriend took me to a yoga class. And my body started hurting. And I said, oh, this is important stuff. I'm going to have to do this every day.
Now, you said your body stopped hurting. Is that just from daily exercise?
Scoliosis. I have a scoliosis.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. And I used to take 800 ibuprofen every day.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Now, I can manage and I can work with it and I do things to get myself. And I can feel when I go to the edge.
Right.
Like going to Maui last week was not good.
Right.
Because pulling the suitcase and you don't care about it.
Right.
How you're pulling, you're just pulling it.
Well,
you know, said,
it's really insightful for me because one of the things I really appreciate in your course is that it's as if you knew that there's edges. When you say those edges,
there's only so far you can go, and you can't. You have to respect them.
For me, I just know that I have some issues, and they are edges. Is putting it nicely, you know.
Yeah, but they're full of information. An edge gets magnified, and that's what happens in yoga. You're not looking at the gross picture of your body. You're like getting deep inside, and you're going to one little spot, and you're feeling, what is that spot doing in relationship to my hips staying like this, twisted on the top like we did today? And
Right. Well, I find
this
really
stuff
interesting.
Is interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, this was worth it to me to do what would be called graduate studies, and that's what I feel.
How old were you when you were doing that, then?
38 years old. Yeah. I cried so much in my life because I wanted to know what it was. I needed something that had purpose in it and that was worth my time and that I enjoyed doing.
Yeah.
I needed to have something that I loved to do because I knew I was going to have to do it the rest of my life.
Right.
So I achieved that.
Right.
I'm very...
Just
very fortunate.
Listened to your body finally and said, okay.
I did the dance. The dance was my favorite.
Yeah.
In fact, how I got into the dance, that was when I was a...
You were younger.
I was a psych major. I was running rats for one of my instructors, Barry Singer, who was very controversial because he taught the psychology of sex class.
Okay.
And parents were in an uproar because he was
at
suggesting...
The university level?
Yes.
Oh, really?
Oh, it was great. There was a list of options you could do, and at the bottom it says, please talk to the professor before going for these options.
Right.
Discuss with your professor. So I was down there at the bottom.
Right.
Things like going to a gay bar.
Right.
Contemplating having an affair.
Right.
Things that were not always what your parents would want you to be doing.
So it wasn't just a plumbing
class,
right?
No,
it wasn't
here's well, they were all up in arms about this.
Wow,
and
wow.
The thing is there was that caveat at the bottom said, talk to the professor first. What he wanted to do with this was getting your mind open to other people's views. Because if you're going to go out and you're in a psychology, you're going to become a psychologist, don't you want to know how your people think?
Right.
You have to have some empathy, and this is what he was trying to do.
Right.
Well, anyway, so I loved it. He was a controversial figure. One day, as I'm running rats, he says, you know, all that students are also all that psych students are frustrated artists.
And that mean? What does he mean by that?
I took that home, yeah. I took it to heart, and that was in October. And by the end of that year, I had auditioned and gotten into the dance department. Because at that point in psychology, it was like 400 level. I have to make a decision. What is it I'm going to do? I was trying to take stats. I took it twice. I hated statistics. It was before you had calculators.
Right, right.
It was
chi-square.
Oh my god, I hated it. And if I was going to be a psych major, I was going to have to pass it. That was a real good way out. I just changed my major.
But we're dropping back, right? 38 okay. or so, you begin your yoga love. Your mm-hmm. love of yoga. But this is before. This is prior. This
yes,
is kind of getting
yes,
into.
Yes, I'm jumping ahead.
That's okay. That's
or behind.
Okay. I mean, that's. My job. To
this is us.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
my life, like yeah. the show.
Thinking it through. So I'm just trying to think it through, being somewhat chronological. But we've got you out of college, but you're interested in movement by the time you get out of college.
Yeah, in fact, I did the last year was dance again.
Yeah.
I was going to do dance. I had to come to a decision. Do you keep paying the money out and studying? What are you going to do? You're going to do now a master's in dance?
Right.
A poor modern dancer?
Right.
I think it's time, Kat, that... Oh, and that was the other thing, something important. In 1986, I went to Europe for a dance workshop.
Okay.
And it was, I had my roommate, who was a 14-year-old, who danced for the Béjart Ballet.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
She was very good.
Wow.
And everybody over there is very good. I started dancing when I was like 21.
Right.
I'm never going to be that good of that caliber.
Right.
And it threw me into a black hole. Yeah. The next year when I came home, 87, I brought home a bow, and
yeah.
Yeah. I quit dance.
Uh-huh.
And I called that the black hole
uh-huh.
in my life.
Yeah, after giving up movement and dance.
I did not attend any dance from 87 until I, what was it, 93 again, I started dancing, or 92, 93 I think it was, I started dancing.
Right.
And I picked it up again.
And you picked it up again, and yoga was shortly after that?
Yes, because I got a neuroma. I landed wrong, and I got an injury where I couldn't
on my foot.
Okay, yes.
On your foot? Yeah.
Yes. Okay. And so that was when I took the yoga class. He goes, well, if you can't be a dance instructor, why don't you become a yoga instructor?
Uh-huh. This is after you
yes.
had been in yoga for a while, right?
No.
No.
It was the first class that took. I had taken one other class in my life, and was while I was a dance major. And I was like, oh, my God, this is weird. They're telling me to hold the pose here. It's about movement.
Right,
I can't do this. It was Iyengar. This didn't take. And I quit after 2 weeks. Went back to dancing.
Okay.
Now it took because my back quit hurting.
Uh-huh.
So I studied for about 3 years, and then 1996, I opened the Long Beach Press Telegram and looked under the Y's in the classifieds, and it said, yoga instructor wanted. So I called them up, and over the phone, she hired me.
And was that at Huntington Lake? No.
That was Linda Evans Fitness Center. It was a women's gym.
Okay.
That's now defunct.
Okay.
It was in Orange County, close enough.
Right.
Yeah, Southern California.
So how did you do that?
I taught that class until I left Long Beach.
Now, there are trainings, all these trainings. I'm oblivious to all of this stuff until I started taking
I got in 97, I went and got trained.
Okay, are there trainings? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, there's different levels.
You kind of knew what you were doing now.
At that point, yes, but no, then you know, the more you know, then the more you know you don't know. So I went and took classes at Yoga Works Santa Monica with Chuck. Chuck and Mati.
Yeah.
And they live here on the island.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So you ever
no, I don't
bump
have
into
Chuck's
them?
On here. No, I do. They come and they teach at our, they teach workshops sometimes here.
That's great.
Yeah, so it's really fun. I get
awesome.
To see my old teacher trainers that I had.
Kind of your mentors?
Yes. And so that was like a series of months that, you know, we met weekends, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I'd drive home from LA crying because it's the most beautiful event of my life that's been, you know, it's like, this is just wonderful. The level of what I was learning. This was my graduate work to me.
I
had the opportunity to study with world-renowned instructors because they're all on circuits, and they pass through, and I had some of the ones, they don't circuit anymore. They all stay at their places now. They were coming through, and mostly Iyengar, some Vini yoga. I did a few vinyasa flow teachers, but mostly Iyengar, which is alignment-based.
Okay.
And Vini yoga, which is movement oriented with your breathing.
It's interesting. I'm relatively new to the yoga, but I've been aware of it, obviously. I mean, you have to be aware of it. Even in the Midwest, we're aware of yoga. But it really seems to have caught on fire in the 21st century. So many more yoga studios. I mean,
this is good. This is the positive wave that's going to change.
Yes.
This is the wave that's going to be changing our near future.
So,
it's a positiveness. And the more that people know about yoga, I don't care if they don't clearly understand what it's all about. I mean, it's a philosophy. It changes you in a positive way. And that's only good for our future.
Well, obviously, when you're talking about, for you, the movement was therapeutic and wonderful and doable and had all those things so physically, but yoga kind of embraces the spiritual as well and the meaningful as well.
Yes.
When did those things kind of unfurl for
you?
Were they always a part of that?
They always were, but when I got into the yoga, it was like a bucka ducka ducka tuck. All of a sudden, you know, you go out and you're like, look, you have Ayurveda to follow, the medicine that goes along with the yoga, the movement. That's the Indian folk medicine, but it works.
Uh-huh.
It's like ancient knowledge that works.
Right.
Just like the yoga is ancient knowledge. It works.
Right.
It
right.
is therapeutic.
Right.
Yeah, it got me into spirituality. I already was, but I think what it did that was important is that, thanks to Barry Singer again, atheism. I went from being a pretty good Catholic girl to a complete atheist at 19. And I was firmly atheist up until 38, 39, getting back in the yoga.
Right.
And suddenly, it gave me a vehicle to understand the word God. It
mm-hmm.
didn't scare me anymore.
Right.
I couldn't talk to people who even said the word God.
How did the family...
it was a hocus pocus thing. And my brother, he's a spinal surgeon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
And we used to kind of butt heads a lot until later on, like in the 2000s, he would tell his patients to go to yoga first before they would do surgery.
Do you get an opportunity to hear from students? Do people talk to you a little bit about your courses, what they enjoy about your courses?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They usually say that it's helped them out and they feel better, and that's the whole point of it.
Yeah.
I figure if your body hurts, you can't pay attention to the things that are really important, because chronic pain is not fun.
I know that.
Yes, it dominates your whole being.
Right.
If I can help somebody get out of pain, that then they can pay attention to the real things in their life, then I'm happy. That's the point.
Going back to another piece of your life that we touched upon very early was you being brought up with your family, basically moving across the country in many different ways. Getting back to that Navy piece, trying to connect you again with being a child who is not totally rootless, but searching probably for something. Do you find that to be a theme in your life a little bit?
Searching?
Or not so much?
Searching for
connections,
yes. There's a writer out there, Carolyn Mace. She's from Chicago, MYSS. Have you ever read her? She's a medical intuitive, which is very interesting to me. The whole medical field is interesting, as long as I'm not one.
Medical intuitive is what?
She actually can diagnose.
Okay.
Even without knowing the person. Mm-hmm. It's like she just is able to tap into what I see as a universal consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
The collective unconsciousness is really the universal consciousness. I always found that very interesting, and she's backed by a doctor, Dr. Uh-huh. Shea, and she wrote a book, Sacred Contracts, in which she wrote, you wrote your life script, and you signed a contract for everything that happened in it. You asked for it to learn lessons. And when I read that book, it really helped me from having this victim mentality, oh, why do these bad things happen to me?
Right.
To going, oh, this is a different way to approach life.
Right.
More with a curiosity about, oh, right. what is it that I'm supposed to learn?
Right.
So that's kind of like what I see life now. I don't really try to make anything happen anymore. It's so chaotic and it changes all on its own. So much, especially here. The 10 years I've been here, I've just seen how things... It looks like it's solid. It's really not. And anything can slide out. This business can slide out.
Right.
You know,
right.
I have many pieces, thank goodness. So if one slides... I mean, if a tsunami came, all my right. pieces are going to slide out.
Right.
You know? So
right.
it's like life is really
right.
a bit fragile.
Mm-hmm.
So I just started reflecting a lot more on just what is it that I'm supposed to learn individually, and I don't try to make big moves out in the world. And
yeah.
I don't know, does that make sense?
I think so. I think so, yeah. I guess I'm wondering about is that, and I think you probably answered it already, kind of this rootlessness of moving around and different
always have wanting a home. Yes. That's why I stayed in Long Beach for almost 30 years.
Yeah, and that's the
I didn't right. want to ever move away,
right.
and I didn't think I was going to move away,
right.
and I ended up here.
Yeah.
It was an upheaval where I had a whole month off. I was going to be doing something else until another woman was involved in it all, so
okay.
I jumped okay. here, and lo
yeah.
and behold, they wanted a sub.
Yeah.
At Yoga Centered. So I subbed for a month here and sort of tried out life, what would it be?
Mm-hmm.
And that was 2005 February.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went back, it took me a year and a half to fold up my life. And I moved myself here. It's interesting
amazing.
Here. I love being on a working island because it reminds me there's the rest of the world. I'm not here on vacation.
Right.
I am here living
right.
along with everyone else. And the thing I saw about Hilo that was sort of disconcerting the first time is that you can't escape the different socioeconomic levels. They all exist, one on top of each other. There is an aloha. People have consideration. I don't know if it's because of the Asian, just a mannerfulness.
Mm-hmm.
People, you know, it's like, you know, you may feel a little exasperated because somebody's in front of you and saying, oh, go ahead, go across. There's 10 cars behind me, but please make your left-hand turn. But you sit there and you go, that's okay. This calms me down, takes the Southern California out of me. What's?
Yeah.
It's not going to scrape anything up, you know, off my nose. I'm fine.
You certainly don't hear the horn honking.
Yeah,
stops to let somebody cross
yeah.
the street, and that's the given.
I mean, they asked, do you want help out to your car? Just little ways that you just see that there's still this respect for elders, for other people. There's more tolerance, I feel, here.
Right.
You know, it's...
Also, the conversation, I've had this with several people, but the conversation, if you do burn bridges, you're going to be bumping into those people.
Again and again, yes, it's certainly a small town, isn't it?
So there's some small town to it as well. I mean,
I like it.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny, I went with my sister, and my sister's a doctor, and we sat down at a kava bar.
Uh-huh.
The person who's next to her,
right.
she's like, hi, and what's your name, and this, and but, and I'm like... My sister, this is like, she's like a total want to know it all. And, but it's a little bit like that, you know.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I walk around town and people come out of the blue. Oh, Dr. Colley,
we love
your sister. It's like, I'm like, okay, it's small town. This is what it's like. You want to know everybody's business.
Absolutely. Sure. You know, one thing that you mentioned in your writing to me, over the weekend is that you had some interest in fashion as well. Is that continuing? Is
mm-hmm.
that an interest of yours?
Yes.
You're definitely the best yoga.
I've been doing unitards and tights.
Okay.
Dance clothing.
Okay. And so you design them?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I play around and put my patterns together, and I've come up with a couple of ones that I
Are
like.
Are you a seamstress
and,
as well?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Awesome.
I did knitting for a while. I haven't done a whole bunch of knitting since I've been here, but
yeah.
I teach it. Yeah. I have a couple of students, so.
Well, Kat, thanks so much for talking today about your life a little bit and about how you see your life as kind of having evolved to this place. And
yeah, it's still evolving. I'm not quite sure what, but...
Yeah, well, thanks for allowing me to be a part of it in your class, and thanks for not hurting me.
Thanks for you not hurting yourself. You tried to shift the blame on me, huh?
Thanks, Kat. Appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
Again, I'd like to thank Kat for sitting down with me for a bit and listening to her story. What strikes me about Ms. Southern is that she is somebody who is always in process of becoming, and combining both her physicality with a bit of yoga spirituality, and a pretty interesting concept of what life should be. She's carved herself out an interesting existence there on the island of Hawaii in Hilo. Thanks for listening. Leave a comment if you'd like. Otherwise, we'll see you again. This is Thinking It Through. My name is John Lund.